Oldie but goodie. That one we all did know, I think. Good to be here, and thank you for making the trip early this morning to get up a little bit earlier. We enjoyed the ride up the mountain once again. Beautiful, very beautiful day. I'm going to start out with a quiz today. I'm going to give quizzes now and then, so just to keep everyone on their toes. How many remember my sermon topic last time I was here? What was the topic? Anybody remember? Uh-oh. So that means I could just give it over again. Just give the same one over again. It's interesting how the One Accord magazine came out, and I didn't plan this together. But if you remember, I'm going to continue, and will continue for whatever time is given me here to help with an absolute free eye exam. And if you remember, part one, what part were we talking about that had to do with this? It was called insight. It was called insight. Huge within the scriptures when you're talking about vision, what God has to say. So many people today are, in fact, so blinded by what's happening around us that sometimes it takes us, and God gives us, thankfully, a Sabbath day that we can stop. Who sang the one stop, and what was that song, that Western song, stop and let the world eat, whatever it was, let me off or something, stop and let me off? It's so interesting how we examine all the things that are taking place around us, all the things that are happening in society, all the things that are happening within our government to really make us mad sometimes. And this is the way it is, but we've got a whole different perspective, don't we? A whole different insight and the way that we look at these things that, yes, though it's discouraging sometimes when these things happen in a beautiful country that we live in, that we know there's something so much greater that's ahead of us. And really, I cannot wait till that starts, because that means all the politicking stops, all the lying stops, all the red tape stops. All of God's laws will be instituted, reinstituted again. People will once again be given understanding. And that will come through the people that God is working through right now. This is a part of what we're doing. And it's so exciting when you stop and think about it. Yet every day Satan puts something in front of us to try to stifle us, to try to get our minds off on what we're supposed to be doing, on that insight that we're supposed to be having. And yet when we look at God's creation, everything around us, it should help us to give an insight on what this is all about. You know, this week I was able, just for a short time, to watch. We get very few channels, but the few that we do are pretty good sometimes. I was watching, as far as the Wright brothers, I don't know if anybody really looked into that or studied into what they had done, but these men basically operated a bike shop. A bike shop. It's incredible that, you know, when I sit down, the other night I was sitting down outside on our little patio that we have and looking up, and I saw this airliner probably 30,000 miles up in the air. I'm looking up at this airliner and going, you know, there are people up there that are having coffee. Someone's probably going to the bathroom. 30,000 feet in the air? How could Orville and Wilbur Wright even have thought that? Here they were devising something just typical, like a kite. And really, when they started, I didn't know some of this, when they started their invention, they were basing their mathematics off of a man. I don't know all the specifics on this, I'm giving you an overview here of a man in Germany that was giving them certain specifics on how they were putting this together, and it wasn't working. They had to go back to the drawing board and found out that it was wrong. It was incorrect. So they redevised this, and who would have thought, as far as, you know how the wingtip of a plane is thicker at the very beginning, who would have thought that that would have provided the lift that an airplane needs? I'm fascinated by why I can sit in an airport and watch jets land and take off all day, because it's fascinating. How do you get that thing off the ground? I remember flying to China, in one shot without stopping, and all that weight, and you're looking at this plane and you're out, and goes, this thing, that of course it's going to get off. I paid my ticket. It better get off the ground. But this huge jet takes off the ground, and you're way above the ocean flying on this thing, and they could put it on autopilot. And just basically that thing flies itself. And this came because of a guy's working in a bike shop. And yet when you look at their lives, what happened is, I believe the older brother, his name is Orville. If I'm correct in this, I might be wrong in some of the details. Again, the overview is what's important here. If it was Orville that got tied up in all the lawsuits protecting his patents, became so discouraged, he died at a very young age. I believe it was about 45 years old. And you look at what they did and what they made, and I wonder about the excitement of what behind what were they were making and how it was transformed to finally they took their modified airplane to Paris, and people were shocked when it actually was able to make a turn, because normally your flights just went up and then came down. He was actually able to fly this thing, and they were shocked that this could happen. And yet we take it for granted when we see an airplane up in the sky, and it fascinates me. How do you do that? And yet what went behind it? You know, what went behind? Was there no doubt there was excitement when they found out that it could actually stay up, when they modified something, changed it, and it actually worked. And then he died at that young age, and then Wilbur went on to sell things and just became non-existent, basically. Then as I walked through the Biltmore, and I saw this man that had all this money, and you look at the bedroom that he was in, and how huge the mansion was, and he died at some. I'm older than this man was, so would I trade that? Would I trade my life for his? No, thank you. He had all the money he ever needed. Does that make someone happy? This is the insight we're able to have. So here, as God's people, we're involved and instrumental in doing a work, and to me that is so exciting because it really is the most important thing on the face of this earth, but no one else would believe that. No one else believes us. We've got something that's got substance, that when you and I die, that dream doesn't die with it. We're going to be resurrected and basically be doing the same thing that we're being taught now. This is the entire purpose. How can you get more exciting than that? This is really, truly the insight that we have. Let's go to Isaiah chapter 43. So many people just can't see it, though. And the problem is sometimes with us is we can start to lose that vision unless we meditate on this and pray about it and understand the importance of having this relationship with our Father in heaven. Isaiah 43. In verse 8, here it says, "Bring out the blind people who have eyes and the deaf who have ears. Let all the nations be gathered together and let the people be assembled. Who among them can declare this and show us the former things? Let them bring out their witnesses that they may be justified, or let them hear and say, it is truth. You are my witnesses, says the Lord, and my servant whom I have chosen, that you may know and believe me and understand that I am he. Before me there was no God formed, nor will there ever be after me." Do people really know God as we know God? No, they don't. And how much do we really take that for granted? It's so easy for that to happen. So one of my favorite scriptures, I'll explain why, is Proverbs 29, verse 18. In the New King James, it'll say, "Without revelation, the people cast off restraint," or "Without vision, the people perish." And then it follows by saying, "But those who keep the law, happy are he." And I wondered early on, years ago, how those two, why do you have one following the other like that? Why would you say, "Without vision, without revelation, the people cast off restraint," and then say, "Happy is he who keeps the law"? Because that's what it's all about. We'll be teaching this law to people in the future. We're learning more about it now and all the intricacies of the law and the spirit that's behind it that people today simply don't understand. That we've got a government that just outright plain lies to your face. And those that have insight can pick it off just like that. You probably listen to certain things this week and go, you know, sometimes I wish I could be in front of someone and go, "Really? You think I'm actually that stupid?" And they actually do. That's the problem. They actually don't believe that people have minds. I know my wife and I were speaking on the way here today because we've done some chiropractor visits, but we've studied and looked into this. And sometimes you go in there and they want to teach you wellness. We've been doing wellness for, we know more wellness than they do. And they have a hard time seeing this, which can be frustrating. They think they need to take you through the program and go, I could probably teach you guys a few things. You know, and they do have good things, but I bet they don't believe in the clean and unclean food. So talk about wellness. How much of a one-up do we have on that? And yet we still have people in the church that aren't doing well, and yet we know we have clean and unclean meats. Because what I did find on some stats when I was there is, you know, the third cause of death in the United States today? Third cause. You could probably guess some of the first two. First one is heart disease. Big problem with hearts. Second one is cancer. Lots of that going around. Would you believe the third one is prescription drugs? Number three, people are averaging in the U.S. 9 meds per person, averaging. Tennessee is the highest med, and they're just. And I've got personal experience with this. I've visited people that are, you have 12 to 15 meds. Well, do you know what you're taking? No, I don't. What is this? Don't have any idea, really. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. So we're taking stuff that people don't even know what this is doing. The drug companies don't know what it's doing to you. It's just big, big money. And it won't be in the kingdom of God. It won't be there. God did create natural things. It just takes some research sometimes, and we're so used to not changing our life patterns and just going and ordering a Happy Meal at McDonald's and thinking it's happy, and it's not happy. I thought about what's in it today. It's not good for us. Most things that are processed are not good. Well, I don't have time. Okay. Well, then have a lifestyle that you're going to have and don't make changes then. But that's going to be the outcome, and God's people are sick because of this. And we know the clean and unclean health laws, and it's bad. We need to be thinking and using the mind that God's given us to look in and to have the insight and not be clobbered by these things. We see all these facts that are out there. It shouldn't be such a surprise. So I'm going to stir it up sometimes. I'm going to make it a little bit I don't want you to get comfortable because this is going to be a lifetime. There are lots of changes, and I don't want to overwhelm anybody by all the things that we have to do. But when we start to have this insight and start taking a look at our lives, you realize, wow, it's hard to make changes sometimes. But people that don't just plain die. You take an alcoholic. You know, if you don't, it's simply amount of not drinking alcohol, isn't it? How many people are able to do that? You get hooked on it. It's saying no, isn't it? But saying no is a lot. It's very easy to say, very difficult to do, and a lot of people have died from it. These are choices that we make, and we're going to be helping others, but we have to do this ourselves now. That's a part of insight. Now, I want to go on something else today that God was able to help one of his servants back in Job chapter 38. What did God do with Job? When it came to the end, when Job went through his, and Job was a good, righteous man. Says that four or five times in the very beginning. He was an upright man, yet God had more to teach him. And it's fascinating when you look at how God worked with Job. This is all for us. In chapter 38, he said to Job, verse 1, then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge? You know, couldn't we say the same thing? Have any of us spoken and then just later on going, I wish I wouldn't have said that? Normally happens after every sermon I give. You do an evaluation. It's just hard to speak for 50 to 60 minutes as a human being and not make some kind of blurb or mistake. But it's the reality. But it doesn't stop you from getting up and striving to do better. So the point is, it's very difficult. But we look at this, we've all said things, and later on, we weren't so accurate. We thought we had a certain amount of knowledge, and later on, we found out we didn't. So he says, prepare yourself like a man. I will question you, you'll answer me. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Well, now he's taken aback. You know what happens? We see things in our lifetime right now. And I think about this man who built the Biltmore. He's been dead for many years. I see a man who revived the work of God, and a man named Herbert Armstrong. He's been dead for many years. What happened to all this? And I look at my life and go, you know, it's coming next. It's short time, but we have on the face of this earth. So he takes Job back. And as sometimes I look at this jet up in the air and go back to the Wright brothers to see their life and all these things that happened, do you think that flight is anything to God? He doesn't need wings. He doesn't need lift, does he? He goes anywhere he wants. It's fascinating to see that aspect. But he took Job back to give Job perspective. The topic today in this aspect of vision is hindsight. There are a lot of things that we can look back on our lives and say, I wish I would have done this differently. Which can be good to do, although when you realize you can't go back and change it, it's time to go forward, which God expects. That's why the sacrifice of Jesus Christ is there. That forgives all the sins for all the things that we've done wrong. Sometimes, though, we've just pay penalties for things. Maybe if someone was lifting too much when you were younger, like normal young guys will do, not take certain precautions and kind of abuse the body at a young age, you end up really paying for it because you never think that 50 or 60 is going to be there. You just don't. And then when it is, you go, oh, I wish I hadn't done that. Why do you think for the kids it says, listen to your mom and dad? Because a lot of what happens is sometimes the kids will go, well, you made the mistakes. I should be allowed to make them too. We go, yeah, you should. Absolutely. You're allowed to make them. But do you really want to be that stupid? That's what it's there for. Don't pull the same thing that I did. Don't do the same things that they did. That's why God gives us certain hindsight. But Job was such a righteous man that all of a sudden he started to get into self-defense mode because his so-called friends were kept telling him, you must be doing something wrong, you must be doing something wrong. All of a sudden he gets his guard up even against God. And God goes, wait a second, do you know, were you there? How did I make all this? How did I make this earth? And it's fascinating how you hear man trying to explain it. It's marvelous as you hear man give credit to evolution for all these things. I'd stand in front of somebody and go, how do you do this? I hear more of what Neil Bort says and of Dr. Phil. Whoa, highly respected man. And yet he says that God made it to be that someone's mind can be perverted to desire another man. I can see two lions. Or when God said, if you don't believe what God said as far as the ark, he said, take two pairs, male and female, that's the way he made it. And you think, well, he said, by the way, take two male of each kind of this too. I wanted to, on the other side of the boat. Never happened. You can see it in nature and how people can come to these conclusions. The veil's being drawn over people. It's being drawn over people's eyes, and we've got to be careful that it doesn't come over our eyes. And sometimes all of a sudden we can get going as a church and things seem to be safe. We're just nice and cozy in our group. No, we're living in a very dangerous society with spiritual devices that are in place here. And Satan knows how to get through that. We've got to be on the ball. We've got to be in this self-examination process to do just what God did, really, to Job. He said, where were you? And so you get to chapter 42, and look what happens after the discussion of God going through all of his creation and making all these things, and all of a sudden Job's head, he's going through an eye exam. God's taking Job through an eye exam. And he's going through some insight, some hindsight, and it gets to chapter 42, and look what Job says. He says, I know you can do everything, and no purpose of yours can be withheld from you. You've asked, who is this who hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore, I've uttered things which I did not understand. And it took that talking to get Job's perspective back again. You know, there are things, obviously, I mean, here, consider if God sat down and talked to us about that. You know, just all of a sudden we're going, you know, there are things I know. I knew about the Sabbath, the holy days. I knew about this and this and this. You brought up things that, you're right, I have no idea. I just have absolutely no idea. I have uttered things too wonderful for me, which I didn't know. He said, listen, please, and let me speak. You said, I'll question you, and you'll answer me. He said, I've heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees. And I pour myself in repentant dust and ashes. Boy, does that ever put you in a perspective before God? You know, if we looked at God as this great God, so great, then let me ask the question, why don't we acknowledge him as this every day? Why isn't he the most important thing in our lives every day? You know why? Because the veil starts to come over, we get caught up with the things in the society, and things just roll along, and we forget who we are, what we're doing, where we're going. It's easy to happen. People fall asleep, there's parables about it, there's all kinds of information about it in the Bible. The fact is, this is what happens. And I don't intend on allowing anybody to fall asleep, unless it's your choice. So let's look at hindsight today. Hindsight is the ability to see after the event what should have been done. Or the perception, so it still has to do, by the way, with an aspect of vision called discernment. Mr. Pennelly wrote a short article in The One Accord concerning this. The perception of the nature of an event after it's happened. Many here might know this as Monday morning quarterbacking. It's always easy to see what should have been done, should have, would have, could have. But it's important for us in light that we don't roll over and make the same mistakes. This is what we try to do. Mr. Franks, I even brought this out. He had written an article that I wanted to share with you. This was written, let's see if I have the date on this, March 29th, when he had said, he says, as he reflected on the discussion that he had with Mr. and Mrs. Ames when they came to visit the headquarters and the formation of the Church of God Worldwide Association, he says, I reflected, I couldn't help but think about the lessons we have learned over the past year. Whether an experience is pleasant or sad, it always provides an opportunity for learning. And that's great. See, because you can have a negative experience and it can still be good. No, I could get in a traffic accident. I could say, I'll never do that one again. I'll never pull that one again. So there are good things about it that we can learn even from a negative experience. He said, even in January of last year, when we gathered in Louisville to establish a temporary structure, one of the central discussions was about what we have learned. No one wants to go through the trauma that we did without learning the spiritual lessons that can be gleaned from the experience. You know, the interesting thing about it, though, is as we learn and grow as Christians, normally we're going to get something else because God our Father is continuing to teach us. And I smile at that sometimes because you ever say, is this over? God says, nope. Because he says, I'm preparing you for something very, very important. And that is exciting. We are the part of the most exciting thing on the face of this earth. And it's not easy. That's why I'll kid about it a little bit, but it's true. We've started over many times, and we've got people that are good with doing that. I mean, we look over sometimes at this hall. Somebody was involved in piano playing and setting up screens, setting up sound equipment, setting up nice tables for food, bringing food, setting up chairs, making sure rent's paid. All this is a team effort in putting together. Some here have served for years in doing their part in that. And putting it out. There's so many things. There's so many aspects of this and putting this together that God doesn't take for granted. He sees it all. And some here were used to travel miles at taking youth to, you know, youth functions, and it was all worth it. It was all worth it. God remembers that. He always remembers the positive things we did. But what does God give to us for this type of vision as we look in the Scriptures? You know, the Bible's got something contained in the law. We'll go over this in the future too, but one aspect of the law, you can hear about law, and then you can hear about things called statutes and precepts. So that's all encompassing about God's law. Commandments, that's law. That's all part of law. But also part of law is called testimonies. We'll look at that in the future, but part of hindsight is the testimonies, part of God's law. 1 Corinthians 10, if we go to 1 Corinthians 10, the wonderful instrument in Scripture contained in the part of God's law called the testimonies. So now, when we go to 1 Corinthians 10, you already know this is Paul's letter of chastisement on the Corinthians. They weren't doing something that they should have been doing. So there's a lot written in this letter that's important even for us, though we're not dealing with the same issue. He brings up very good points. Now notice here he says in verse 1 of 1 Corinthians 10, "Moreover, brethren, I would not that you should be ignorant." What happens when you get all of a sudden caught up with the things in life, things that are taking place? All of a sudden we can be ignorant on what the Scripture says. You know, Christ told the Pharisees many times who should have known the law. He goes, "You err not knowing the Scripture." Remember he said that to the Sadducees? "You err not knowing the Scripture." These were people highly skilled in aspects of the law, didn't even know what they were talking about. He says, "Of how all our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea." Now, where else can you find that "I would not that you should be ignorant"? Does that kind of spark sometimes certain words? Where else would you find that Paul told a group of people, "I don't want you to be ignorant"? Does anybody remember? Another book. 1 Thessalonians 4. For those of you that have been choirs, we've sung that song. I can remember that verse because we sang it in a song. "But I would not have you to be ignorant, brethren, concerning those which are asleep, that you sorrow not, even as others which have no hope." I don't want you to be ignorant. So in other words, I can say this from personal. Now, I don't know what it's like to lose a spouse. Any loss in a family is difficult, whether you've lost a child, a spouse, it's difficult. But guess what we know that's different? Paul said, "I don't want you to be ignorant because you're going to see those again. I'm going to see my mom and my dad again, so I don't sorrow. Do I miss them? Yes, but it's a part of life. Death is a part of life. Sometimes it comes shorter, sometimes it's longer, sometimes it's early on. But the point is, this is a plan in life. So when we see death, we view it much differently. So that sorrow doesn't have to take hold and change our lives. Yes, you're going to sorrow and grieve because of a loved one, but it doesn't have to be a continuing thing to change your life and your perspective on what we're doing and what's going on, because you're going to see that person again. And do I look forward to it? And we're going to remember the times that we've talked about this. And we're going to see these people and go, "I remember talking about this, and wow, already it's here." Why I say already it's here? Because all the things that we've done, I'm almost disappointed to look forward at something that I know I'm going to enjoy because, oh, it's going to go by fast. Look at how many feasts now that we've looked forward to, and they're all behind us. How many times have we looked forward to Feast of Tabernacles? I always have, and they're all gone. The experience is gone. Now I'm looking forward to another one. And that one's going to be gone too. So what's the point? The point is, the real thing is coming. If those came like they did and came and went, so the real thing will be here. And this is where our vision really needs to be. And that's why it says this. I don't want you to be ignorant. This has to do with retrospect. It was important for the brethren to understand and to remember in retrospect these things. Retrospect meaning a review, a survey, or a contemplation of things in the past. Verse 2, it says, "And we're all baptized," this is figuratively, "unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea. All did eat the same spiritual meat." They were taught about God's laws. They were even taught about the spiritual elements of God's laws. "And they all ate or drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ, the God of the Old Testament. But with many of them God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness." And look what it says in verse 6. "These things were our examples, the testimonies, for the purpose that we should not lust after evil things, as they also lusted." And we can say, "Oh yeah, there's lust. I mean, they lusted. What do you mean lust? What do I lust after? What does this world give you an opportunity to lust after? About everything that's out there. About everything that's out. Don't notice the advertisements? are about lust. I was noticing once again, I just walk into a Walmart to get my oil changed, and I look and there's Car and Driver magazine. Who's on the hood? Why do they put a scantily clad woman on the hood of a hot rod? Why don't they just accept the car for what it is? Why the woman? And that's big. So I wonder, why does some, did they buy it for the car or for the women? The magazine? Probably both. It sells magazines. So is that not a lust feature, though? And that's one aspect of it. Let's go here to Numbers chapter 11. Numbers 11. Let's see what happened here as a testimony. Because I'll try to bring it up a little bit to modern day times, too, to give you some examples. Maybe some of you have seen it. Maybe we've been a part of it at times. Has anybody ever heard complaining here among the Church of God? I have. I remember, maybe I brought out this before, but I remember when a certain area was chosen for a feast site. Well, how come they're choosing over there? How come they're choosing Orlando? Don't they know that everybody's going to want to go to Disney World during the feast? Yeah, that's why they planned it. They don't want people coming to the services. They say, you know, when this guy's speaking, we want people over at Disney World. So a bunch of guys got together and said, look, we've got all these great feast sites. Let's plan one bad one just to test these people. Somebody ever sit down and think about this, that a group of guys got together and tried to plan coordinated sites that were beneficial for the people that they measured that were in certain areas, that sometimes certain people don't have to drive along. There's a lot that goes behind the planning, plus an appeal to God, please help us to have a good site. Not where I want it to be. I've not heard anybody do that. But yet that's what happens. It's natural as descendants of the Israelites. You can see it coming out sometimes. But this is not how we should be. If we've got good suggestions, bring up suggestions. Oh, they won't listen to me. Yes, they will. Yes, they will. And I'm not saying that that's the site that they'll choose, but they will give it an ear. And if it makes sense, we'll have a feast site there. So it says in Numbers 11, verse 4, the mixed multitude that was among them fell a-lusting, and the children of Israel wept again and said, who will give us flesh to eat? We remember the fish which we ate in Egypt freely, the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. Remember all that food. Evidently you forgot the whippings, and you forgot the mortar, you forgot the bricks, you forgot the slavery. Here the complaints come out. And look what they're complaining about. But now our soul is dried away, and there's nothing at all except for this manna. Wow, before our eyes. Look at it described. The manna was like coriander seed, and the color thereof is the color of bdellium. So it describes the coriander. Now, if you do a little research on coriander, I'm not into the kitchen so much, so I don't know. I had to look into this. It says coriander is not just a spice used in cooking, but has many medicinal values and promotes natural healing. So God not only gave them something that tasted good, but it actually did something for them. Try to find that out there. You'll find a lot of things that taste good. You might find a chicken nugget with the sauce. Might taste really good. You find out how not good it is for you. Coriander. And it says the people went about. They gathered it, ground it in mills. They beat it into a mortar, baked it in pans, made cakes of it. Oh, they were good at just like we are today. You'll find out in Mexican food how many different ways you can make it. You know, it's basically the same stuff. You just make it into a taco, a burrito. It's beans, meat, same thing, but just made in different ways. I used to work at Taco Bell. I made everything different ways. I know about Mexican food. It's the same thing made in different ways. And people are good with that. And so that's what they did with the manna. But you know what happened? We're tired of this manna. You know, and think about it. It says the taste of it was as the taste of fresh oil. Not fresh oil. Not old oil. Not oil that's been shipped and it's taken 3 months to get here from Italy. And it says first cold pressed and you taste it. Oh, that's fresh oil? No, this was fresh oil. Now just stop here. Let's do a little insight. What would you think about its taste? Do you think that God and Christ got together and go, let's make it not taste so good? No, they didn't need to test Israel with that. They made it taste good, and it tested them. But you know, do you think it would not be the best that one would experience in cuisine? If one were going to taste food, do you ever think, I will gather, no pun intended, as they gathered, but in the future, we'll be able to taste test this? By the way, can I have taste some of that manna? We might have it as a side dish at the wedding supper. Who knows? Who knows what this will be like? But we'll be able to taste this. Going, and you guys complained about this? I don't need anything else. But this is what happened. The dew fell upon the camp at night. The manna fell upon it. And Moses heard the people weep throughout their families. Every man in the door of his tent in the anger of the Lord. And they're going, oh, we don't have anything else. There's no more meat anymore. It's all we got is this manna. And they were really weeping. It says they were crying. Really? You spoiled little children. And he was mad. As any parent would be when one of your kids would get that spoiled. I've given you all this and you're gonna complain to the point of even crying? That's how much you don't appreciate what I've given to you? God says he was greatly displeased. Moses was also displeased. So was that really a surprise? What can God's people complain about today? We can complain about temperature in the meeting halls. I've gone through that where it's too hot, it's too cold. It's just right. We've had the three bears syndrome within meeting halls. You know, seating. Can't believe I would go to the Feast of Tabernacles. My first time as an assistant coordinator, I'm sitting in the office going, okay, somebody comes in, all those seats are taken by ushers. I said, really? Okay, this is my chance to work on something here. So I go, let's go. I want to find out about this. We'll find out these ushers and we'll stone them. You know, we go in, get to the front, we look at all the chairs. And the statement, I believe, was, I might be wrong, and it was something like this, okay? But it was ridiculous. It was exaggerated. It was like two-thirds of this auditorium have usher seats. So we get to the front, and I look. And I look at him and say, do you want to stick with the statement two-thirds? Because it was not near two-thirds. It wasn't even – there were signs on there. Let me explain. When you go to a certain section and you have usher, and then it says usher, 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 right next to each other, what would you think that would be? Do we have five ushers sitting right next to each other? Or is it possible that – it just takes a lot extra to say usher and usher's wife and usher's number one son and usher's daughter and usher's other son and nephew if he wants to sit with me today too. So when you get combined ushers that are there hopefully to serve the people as they come in to take care of their needs, so they have to have an end seat so they get out and they can take care of all their duties. So when you look at that in perspective, is it really ushers are taking all the seats? No, it's not. And I've heard complaints about, all those ministers, they sit all in the same place, and they all get the same seats. Why was that? Because they just want to beat everybody out so they can get the lunch first. No, that was originally designed, if you would ask somebody, that if somebody wanted to find their minister, this is the section where the ministers are staying. Now, you know what's happened because of that? None of the ministers basically sit in one section anymore because they want to avoid any kind of judgment like that. But that was the purpose for that, not to just give them chief seats. But when people wanted to find a minister or their minister, that's where they could go. But the complaints, they want the same. They want all this and they want that. You just heard murmuring for years. That's what you would hear among the people of God. I remember at Wisconsin Dells, one of my first times there. Well, it was a crowded sight there. And before the closing prayer, there were people running out the doors so they could be the first ones out of the parking lot before the closing prayer. I'm looking at hindsight in this going, okay, I wonder where those people are today. Were their hearts truly in to God? Did they know, by the way, that was a closing prayer? That wasn't just some kind of order of service, but it's actually a prayer that goes up to our Father in heaven. And it's a respect to our Father who was actually really there. Not just a statement to be made, but people are running out of services. Well, I don't care about the Father. I want to get to my meal first. So you see these attitudes and you're going, look, this is not the attitude that we want to have. In hindsight, we want to have a whole different perspective. Does that mean you can't ask questions? Does that mean that you can't be bothered by something? No, but there's always an appropriate way to handle and to deal with it. It doesn't say that you've got to be quiet and sit on your hands and not doing anything if you see a problem, or if it gets too cold or gets too hot that you can't ask a question and say, hey, would you mind, is there a problem with turning it up? Although temperature, I don't want to handle that. Just is what happens sometimes. There are people that get too cold and people that get too hot. The only solution I have with it is we probably range on getting it a little bit colder, because you can always put a blanket or a shawl on when it gets too hot. We don't want people taking off their clothes around here. So that's the only solution that I would know if it gets like that. But there are ways, if the seats are too hard, I've seen people bring pillows, and that's fine. They've dealt with it in very appropriate ways, and they have been blessed for it. But what I'm saying is when you see murmuring that took place in Israel, it's not the only time it was taking place. It's happened in modern-day times and still does. We just have to put ourselves in check that we handle things and don't get, because it doesn't have to do with me or what I'm saying the complaints are. It has to do with you being blessed by your Father. Because if He sees you having a good attitude, He's going to bless you for it. So it has to do with that personal relationship. So this, again, this is here for us. Now, verse 7, I guess I took off from 1 Corinthians chapter 10. We need to go back there really quick because the example continues. It says, "Ne you be idolaters." So it brought forth the lusting, and I showed modern day examples of how we can actually lust after things. There are people that lust after, just amazing things. When you see the new Game Boy that comes out or some new game device, how people camp overnight before the Walmarts to get that device, and they're probably receiving food stamps. That's a society we're at, and it can dribble over sometimes into our attitudes. Verse 7, "Neither be idolaters as were some of them, as is written, the people sat down to eat and drink, rose up to play." Well, how can we be idolaters today? Does it really take just a physical image? We know we wouldn't get some image like Baal and bow down before it, but is there other ways? There certainly is. You know, today we've got things, sports is huge today when it comes to idolatry. They call it, you know, what they've done now with sports is it's on a continuing cycle. There's always something that's taking place, always, for somebody to kindle in with sports. Whether you go from March Madness to the NHL Stanley Cup to now the basketball has just ended. The basketball tournament's just ended. What do you have to replace that? Baseball. You got baseball now. And then football is going to start pretty soon. And then you got the Kentucky Derby. And everything else to keep people's minds off of what's truly important and on this kind of thing. And people get really stirred up about it. Sometimes if your team loses, how much does it affect your life? I mean, people are really bothered sometimes to the point where it affects their entire life. You know, where I was born in Detroit, it was very hard to root for the Lions because they just always lost, so I could never gloat. But then the Red Wings started coming back, the hockey team there, and they won the Stanley Cup. My team finally won the Stanley Cup. I call it my team. And then I looked at my team. Detroit Red Wings. Okay, let's look at the roster here. Fedorov, Kozlov, Holmstrom, Lindstrom. Wait a second. Nobody's from Detroit. Nobody's from Michigan. Nobody's from the U.S. And it's the Detroit Red Wings. But it's my team. Really? Interesting perspective when you start to take a look at this, isn't it? So let's ask you this. How important is this? Who won the Stanley Cup 3 years ago? Who knows? I guess it's not that important, is it? But it's important to a lot of people. So yeah, people, I mean, this is huge. And you know, people kill each other. In the soccer it's probably will gravitate here. You know, soccer games where people have killed the referees. That's where it gets. It gets that bad. You've got look what they do with Hollywood, the idolatry of Hollywood. I mean, designs and styles. I feel so bad for the women. I feel so bad. Now, don't be embarrassed if you've got high heels today, but I feel bad for you. Because, number one, I know that they're bad for you. And number one, I'm going, how can you stand on something as small as my finger? How does that work? But it's designed so, supposedly, your legs will look better. You know, I like my wife's legs without, with or without. And I actually would like her back to last longer. So I'm in favor of the lower heels that have got more to them. But that's, again, this is the designs. And the Hollywood designs, when you see what comes behind this and how the trends come back in, come and go, and who does this? I look at the people, I'm going, he does this? He's the one that sets the design for all this? God help us. This is where it comes from. When you look into what's behind this, It's unnerving sometimes when you see what's pushed and what's foisted upon us. And this is the things that we see, we watch. I'm not telling everybody to go just stay out of style. But there is obviously, we look into these things and they're appropriate things for everything that we do. But this is what's upon us. I never screamed over a band. Like I remember when the Beatles came out. I go, why are people, they're playing the music. Can you stop screaming? But they're screaming. And some probably remember that. What are you screaming about? Was it just the thing to do? But it doesn't end. It never ends. It's almost like that Harley guy that I saw 30 years ago. I saw a Harley guy wearing an unusual helmet with a beard. You can go out there today and see a Harley with an unusual helmet with a beard. They're always replaced. You'll always see some time a replacement. And it's the same with screaming. They scream over a guy named Justin Bieber now. He's the guy. And what does he do? He gets up like Elvis. Now, not like Elvis. I don't know if he moves his body like that. But anyway, he gets up and does music and does a lot of movement on the stage. And so people scream over that. I mean, really, they do. And people and women have given their bodies to rock stars. Can you imagine that? Is this not an idolatry? And forms that can pass over even to our own children. So I think sometimes if we sit down and just talk about this, it doesn't mean you can't like music. But let's consider. You know, when I was presented with a different form, somebody came up to me and go, I've got some Christian music here. I've got a Christian rock band. And I looked at the picture. Nobody was smiling. It's just like, and I'm going, you know, just by the picture, I don't think I want to listen to the music. Because what's happening now is they can't make it in rock. So they're just putting Jesus and attaching that in the name and calling it Christian rock. You know, can we not teach to have, let's look at some things here from the past to now. You know, is John Lennon going to be resurrected and go, man, you wrote some great songs, you're in? I don't think so. He didn't know about God's laws and God's ways. So though they were screamed at, you know, when people are resurrected, I don't want people to be screaming at me. We don't want that, do we? Because we're going to teach them we're to help you. Although people will be worshiping after we become gods, as God is, we know who the Father is. We know who Jesus Christ, our elder brother, is. We don't want people screaming at us. We're going to teach them how to serve others also. Verse 8, it says, neither let us commit fornication. Isn't it interesting where that word comes from? The Greek word on that? Porneo. What's one of the worst things that's taking place today that's taking down marriages, that's perverting what God put in place? to be pure and to be good. It's called porn. It says, as some of them committed and fell in one, 23,000. Do you think this was not rampant in Israel? How did this spread like this? How do you get something? You know how it spreads? Somebody says, well, this is good. This is okay. People will tell you now, go look at porn to improve your sex life. Really? Does that make sense? To other people, it does. Thinking with God's mind, would that be the right thing to do? Or is there, would that tell you something else might be missing in my marriage life that I might need to take a look at instead of watching somebody else to improve my sex life? You know, everything this world does is backwards from the way that God made it. So it's very, once they say something, it put my guard up right away. One of the most grievous sins confronting our society today. In verse 9 it says, neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed of the serpents. Let's keep our hand there and let's go to Numbers. There's a little inset here to explain this. Numbers 21, verse 9. Don't forget this. We're looking at hindsight. We're looking at examples that we need to examine in our life. And sometimes we can be so detached because it was so long ago and circumstances were so different. But the attitudes were the same. We're just in different, sometimes different circumstances. Numbers 21, verse 4. They journeyed from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea to compass the land of Edom, and the souls of the people were discouraged because of the way. Can we bring it up to nowadays? The souls of the people were discouraged because of the way. Do you know, this has not been my favorite direction in the church. You know, since we, if you want to call it, stood up for the truth, as people have done here for years, because you're here now, and you've gravitated maybe to some different organizations along the way, but I never saw this happening. I don't like getting together with people and saying, hey, let's go, and pow, it blows up in your face. That can get discouraging. But am I going to complain to God? Or is this a learning experience? I look at all these things that we've done. I don't know if I would have, I couldn't do anything about it. I wouldn't have changed anything. Because we always wanted to preach the gospel and feed the flock and be with a church that thought the same thing according to God's word. But it's easy to be discouraged, and some people have gotten discouraged and have stopped because of the way. And the people spoke against God, against Moses, and people have spoken against God and against Moses. They said to us, for years, we kept our kids from playing sports on Friday night. I'm not going to let that. We had one person tell us, I'm not going to let that happen to my kids. I was stopped from doing it. I'm not going to let it happen to my kids. Spoke against God. Spoke against the ministers. I've seen it all the time. Brings out Ezekiel. Well, it says, all you ministers. I go, wait a second. All you ministers? All you ministers? Yeah, God indicts a bad ministry, certainly. But have there not been good ministers along the way, too? I just heard something spoke about Leon Walker, who's been serving for 50 years, and many other ministers that have served many, many years faithfully. Have they been perfect by any means? No. Who of us has? Who of us has been a perfect father, a perfect mother? None of us. And yet they are always given some way of murmuring or complaining. They spoke against Moses and said, why have you brought us out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no bread, neither is there any water, and our soul loathes this light bread. Loathes? Wow. Do you know, so God here did what he gave him a good spanking. Now when people look at the Old Testament, they look at a God that they think changed. But he's not. He was working with a civil nation at this time. He was working with a specific people, and he spanked them. And sometimes the spankings meant death. But you know what's going to happen with these people? They're going to be resurrected. He just couldn't deal with such a rebellious people and take them over into Canaan and have a people that would build up, because that attitude, as you know, spreads. He couldn't allow that to happen. that's why this happened. So many of the people of Israel died. So back to verse 10 of 1 Corinthians, that's why it says, neither don't murmur as some of them murmured and were destroyed of the destroyer. Now let's go to another inset here. Let's go to Numbers 14, verse 26. Numbers 14. And we're going to come back to 1 Corinthians. Once again, this is sermon is based around 1 Corinthians 10 because it is the substance of the hindsight. And trying to bring it up to date where we're at now, how can we relate to this? Numbers 14, verse 26, the Lord spoke to Moses and to Aaron, saying, how long will I bear with this evil congregation who murmur against me? I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel, which they murmur against me. Say to them, as truly as I live, as you have spoken in my ears, so will I do to you. Your carcasses will fall in this wilderness, and all who were numbered of you, according to your whole number, from 20 years old upward, who have murmured against me. Doubtless you will not come into the land concerning which I swore to make you dwell therein, except Caleb the son of Jephunneh and Joshua the son of Nun. So interesting. How do you bring this up to date? We've got a promised land that we're looking forward to, too. And God's not going to bring murmurers and complainers into it. He's going to bring those that are grateful, thankful, have the vision, understand what our responsibility is, that are constantly evaluating ourselves, that know that this is not some kind of game, or we're not going to get caught up in it, we're not going to get comfortable, we're not going to look at just church services once a week as just coming here and playing a church game. No. Because if that happens, you won't make it into the promised land. And so that's how we bring it up to this day. Verse 35, as the Lord I have said, I will surely do it to all this evil congregation that are gathered together against me. In this wilderness they will be consumed, and there they will die. And the men whom Moses sent to search the land who returned and made up all the congregation to murmur against him by bringing up a slander upon the land, even those that did bring up the evil report died by the plague before God. But Joshua and Caleb, who were of the men that went to search the land, they lived. Back to 1 Corinthians 10. Now all these things happened to them for examples. They're written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. Now this is almost like Proverbs here. That why do you toss this one in here? Wherefore let him that thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. Let him that thinks you can look at this first and go, well, that was Israel. This is different now. If that happens, we're in danger zone. We've got to be able to bring these up to date and look what's going on around us to have that insight as well as the hindsight to take a look at what's happening around us. Because he says in verse 13, there's no temptation that's overcome you, but he is such as common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tested above that which you are able, but with the temptation make a way to escape that you will be able to handle it or bear it. So in other words, do you really believe in God's calling now? You're going to prove it by what you do, what you say, how you act. Not just the show, but how you live on a daily basis. That's how God's going to see this. And the tests come before us all the time. We've got people that are dying of cancer. We got all kinds of trials and tribulations are confronting people in the church. So what's our responsibility? Pray for those people and understand and have the discernment of what's going on. Be aware of what's happening around us. See, we're looking back at what our life was like and the things that we have learned. It truly can be exciting. We've got an opportunity here that we can either accept it and understand what lies ahead of us. Mr. Franks pointed out the scripture in Esther. Do you remember when the Jews were set to be slaughtered? And Mordecai goes to Esther. What does he say? He goes, the time is for you now. Yeah, you're safe. Esther was safe. But Mordecai said, you know, you can go to the king now and you can pray about this. And it could be because Mordecai knew from prophecies that the Jews would be delivered. They had to be because Christ was going to come out of the Jews. So he knew that it would be delivered, but how was it going to be delivered? He said, it's now time for you. This is a time for you right now. See, how do you bring that up to today? We've heard of preaching the gospel for years and years and years. Oh, sure, all right. Yeah, preaching. Everybody talks about preaching the gospel. Yeah, this is what it's all about. This is what we're going to be doing until Christ returns. And we can either be a part of it now, or God can have somebody else be a part of it. Many people have said, I don't want to be a part of that anymore. I don't want to do that. I don't like the way. I don't like what I've gone through. I don't like this. The choices are still there. It's up for us. The reality is here, what the scriptures say, but it requires that vision aspect. And so as we talked about the insight, it's very important that we stay close to God. Remember in Daniel 12, it says, the wise will understand. You can't just be wise. We're wise because we look at life around us. We examine things, and I love doing that. And we should love it. We should all love what's going on here. To look at what's going on in our society, to see the difference from the way society teaches, from the way that God teaches. We don't have to walk around grumbling or murmuring. God said, hey, all these things are going to happen. Be happy, because all these things are going to take place. Be happy, because we've been called to know differently. And our time may not be now, but once Christ returns, then it is our time, isn't it? It's our time, yes. Even those that say, me? Yes, you. You and I, providing we continue. That's the most exciting part. So it doesn't matter if you are not able to build mansions now or devise airplanes like the Wright brothers did. Fascinating things. But their life really wasn't that fulfilled, really. Was it? They didn't understand the truth like we do now. Let me finish here with just a perspective. One that was at NASA. It says, a colleague of mine at NASA was assigned to prepare a presentation on lessons learned from our bad experience with the Hubble Space Telescope. On his chart at the briefing, lesson number one read, in naming your mission, never use a word that rhymes with trouble. So this was a part of hindsight. It's interesting how humorous things could get at the time. Do you know when the Israelites were taken into captivity, how many of them understood that as they were taken into captivity, that God didn't forsake them? Do you remember when they were taken into captivity, even by the Babylonians? We've got the whole story of how God specifically worked with Nebuchadnezzar. Specifically, every leader God was dealing with. So Israel, even in captivity, had a purpose. Very few understood that. But there are those that recognize, too, that, look, God has spared us. We're going to get to go back. They saw something in hindsight. We can see things in hindsight, too. We can see, look, we don't want to do it that way. We've learned. We have made mistakes. Even as a church, we've made mistakes. Lots of mistakes, haven't we? When you look at things we wrote, things that we said, I don't want to dwell on those. I want to go, look, those were, nobody, I don't believe, had a bad attitude in saying, by the way, you can't do this or shouldn't do that or whatever was done before. We're learning from these things. We're supposed to be a different, a more mature church, and we're still growing with that. But could some really see how Cyrus even was being worked with by God and how God anointed him for a specific purpose? You know, the Jews of Jesus' day did not yet have the hindsight because they were so caught up with what they were doing that they did not see the Messiah right in front of their eyes. And how could they? How could they? This was a man. I mean, if Jesus came in here right now and was looking like he would look as he was in New Testament times, we would probably go, nah. Now, well, why? Well, you're not supposed to look like that. What is he supposed to look like? Well, he's supposed to have this beautiful Fabio-type figure, right? And yet when you look at the scripture, it says you couldn't recognize him. So here they saw a man who was a carpenter, who was the son of Mary and Joseph. So, no way. So there was all these questions that came up. Could he be a demon? Who was this guy that was proclaiming? It was right in front of their eyes, and they couldn't see it. How do you bring it up to today? We've got the truth right in front of our eyes. We have a Father in heaven. Do we know who we're praying to? You might know exactly every detail of what he totally looks like, but he's made in our image. I think when we see him as he is, it says we will see him as he is. We'll go, never thought you looked like that. I really wasn't sure, but we're going to see him as he is. The time is not yet. But we will be saying, you know, I didn't know what you totally looked like, but I know who I was praying to. And I know who Jesus Christ was, even though I didn't know exactly what he looked like either. So they were so caught up, and they weren't even sure that God was in their midst. What we can see with hindsight, or what can we see with hindsight, that we missed at the time. Some people have more hindsight than others, and why we shouldn't live in the past, the question is what do we do the hindsight with what we have? And how do we use it to strengthen our relationship with God? Can we go back and trace the events in our lives, including the difficult and the sad times, and see that God was really there? And be able to share those hindsight experiences with others when they're in troubled times. You know, I have people tell me certain situations, oh yeah, I don't know how we're going to do this, how we're going to pay for this, how is this going to happen? And we can share with them our experiences, and you can share your experiences too. Because sometimes people all of a sudden say, well, maybe that was just happenstance. Do you really believe that? I think the discernment tells you, no, God's always been there for us, and he always will be. So maybe this week, we can spend some time reflecting and seeing how we can tell of our experiences, our hindsights, and share those in different ways if we've not done so before, to see where God was and where he is at work. And like all the psalmists that came before and were proclaiming the wonderful deeds that God has done, then our lives and our happenings can be filled with songs of joy and with praise toward God also. The aspects of vision that we're going to be going through are so incredibly important when it reflects back on Proverbs, where there's no vision. We've only gone through two. There's three more to come. This is a huge topic when it talks in Scripture about having vision to be able to see. Do we really see what God has in store for us? Do we look and see with hindsight not only what God's people went through, but what we went through in our lives that have enacted changes and that will continue to enact changes? That will help people as we go forward toward God's kingdom. Let's continue to be able to look and stir ourselves up and ask God for his help to have the vision that we truly need.